Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the wonderful Wesley Botham, the joyful Jennifer Kathleen, and our very own rambunctious Rob Abrazzato. Hi, Rob! Today, we have myself, Ange, along with Jared, Phil, and Head Gnome John, and we're here to talk about how to handle running your game when everything you planned goes seriously sideways. Before we dive into that topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. I know we've all dealt with running a game when things go awry, and we'll get into that very soon, but I wanted to ask, was there ever a time when you, as a player, were the reason a game went sideways? John?
Oh, you're looking at my face through the Google interface and seeing me think. when I tend to play in games, especially with strangers, I try to keep myself curtailed a little bit. Like, I try to focus on other players' fun. But back in the day in my regular group, I did stir the pot a little bit. I remember one game where I was a changeling in Eberron, and we were exploring this temple in what's the jungle continent in Eberron?
Chult?
Zendrix.
Oh,
yeah,
Zendrix.
It's Eberron Chult, pretty much. So we were there, and we found some gigantic tooth, right? And it was like bathed in light and, oh, you know, angelic singing around it. And I'm off on my own, and the GM's there, and I'm like, Alec, I make an opening in my mouth with my shape-changing powers. He's like, you what? I don't know. This has angelic light, and, like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, I can shape-change it out. And he keeps a straight face because it's, like, a cursed god-level magic item. And I take it, and I stick this giant tooth in there. And it shrinks a bit, but it's still a giant tooth in my mouth. And he's, like, he's laughing his head off because he's like, I knew if anybody was going to do that, you were going to do it. So it was like somebody's play on the hand of Vecna, you know, the eye of Vecna. It was the tooth of some giant god. But I took, like, a -2 penalty to charisma because I could no longer shape change around that tooth. It was so big in my mouth. However, I got, like, power word kill, and I could charm people at will, and there were, like, a slew of other powers on this, like, artifact level thing he rolled for. I just had to hurt in my mouth. So eventually when I took over DMing that game, because we're kind of round-robining the DMing, I had my character go away. The only way to get it out was to be killed, remove the tooth, and then get resurrected. And he got resurrected as, like, the spy master for some organization in Sharn, the City of Towers. So he's like, you know, I love the godlike powers, but I really need to be this spy person. So he kind of underwent the extreme stuff. But it made the game while I was playing that, like, phenomenally probably boring for the other people, because I'd just be like, I just use power word kill on them and I say my name at them because my name is a killing word. And they'd be like, fine, just god your way past it again, John. Just go past it. So yeah, I took that to the fun places because I knew I was out of the game in another 3 sessions when we were switching anyways.
How about you, Jared?
The first thing that comes to mind is I was in a 4th edition game and I was playing an Eladrin Paladin. And I was playing that paladin as this completely naive character that was from the Feywild. He didn't understand the prime material plane or human societies or anything like that. And the overall campaign arc was that there was this literal doomsday clock where there was a cult or secret organization that was collecting these crystals to power the doomsday clock to advance time towards Armageddon. And after multiple sessions, I noticed that our GM kind of fell into a rut. And I knew him well enough to know this was a rut and not actually clues. And every scene, when he was looking for details, he would start talking about, oh, there's candles everywhere and the candles are flickering and everything. And we fought this group of mercenaries, and he made the mistake that day of saying, when we asked what's in the pack, he was like, oh, they have a couple of candles and they have whatever. So my Eladrin seized upon this moment and realized that the group that was looking for these crystals to cause Armageddon was the Candlemaker's Guild. Now, I had determined this was just going to be a thing that my character believed because my character was super naive. The rest of the party seized on this idea and decided that, yeah, I think this is a thing that has legs. And they kept bringing this back to the point to where the DM now had to come up with details of the actual candle-making guild, which didn't exist before I came up with this conspiracy. And then, after giving us the details of the candle-makers guild, trying to then wean us off the idea that it was the candle-makers guild that was actually in charge of this cult.
Please tell me Trim Your Wixie Virgins to Make Much of Time was involved in this somewhere.
It wasn't, but it would have been great.
How about you, Phil?
Yeah, I don't know if I was solely responsible, but I was party to derailing a campaign. It was actually Chris Nizak's Dungeon World campaign, The Airy Peaks, which is a location-based campaign in these mountains called The Airy Peaks. And Chris threw out a plot line that he wasn't expecting anyone to take about leaving the peaks. And it was actually for Bob Everson. And Bob's like, okay, I think I need to go. And then because I had bonds with Bob, I'm like, well, you can't go alone. I'll go with you. And then because the other characters had bonds with me, they were like, well, if you two are going, we're going. And suddenly Chris is sitting there and the entire party's like, yep, we're leaving the peaks. And he had like nothing else written or planned. It was like, okay, I guess this is happening. And we did. We left the peaks for what was not a very good stint of the campaign. And Chris had to do some work to actually kind of fix things and put us back in the peaks. So it was kind of it was like how World War I started. Right. Like it was.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Chris is actually going to be bringing the Airy Peaks to Gnome Stew soon. He's going to be converting it into something he's writing up for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking forward to those.
Hey, Ange. How about you? Have you ever made a game go sideways?
Well, there was a Star Wars campaign my friend TJ was running, and we were essentially on a mission that was supposed to be a big heist. And I think he's smart enough as a GM not to expect too much from the players and like just roll with it. But I still think he expected our actual recovery of this particular item to go slightly differently. But we decided to try and at least get a look at the vault where the artifact was being held by having our diplomat character, who was very much in the vein of a Princess Leia who loved her fancy hair and headdresses, decided that she was going to have her headdress put into the vault because it was very valuable. And me, my young Jedi was playing her assistant. And I was like, okay, I will take it down. So I was led into the vault and got, basically opened up my Jedi senses to locate the artifact. And the artifact was deeply corrupted and evil, which, he had me do. So I don't remember what the actual role was, but some sort of constitution role. And basically, I ended up projectile vomiting all over everything, including the artifact, the headdress, and the concierge who had led me down into the vault. And in all of that confusion with the losing my lunch and all that, I was able to somehow pocket the artifact and be led out of there while he got a cleaning crew in to clean it. And then we ran away as quickly as we could with this artifact, which was making me sick because I was the only Force-sensitive character in the party. And like he was like, that was not how I was expecting that to go at all. So I basically went, made the game go sideways by solving a heist with vomit.
I would just like to say, as awesome as that story is, no Star Wars game actually goes sideways. It just shifts into the expanded universe.
That is very, very true. So let's get into our main topic. The saying goes that no plan survives contact with the enemy. And while I would never advocate for equating your players with being the enemy, the saying is still pretty apt for session prep and what actually happens at the table. So what do you guys as GMs do when your game goes sideways and you've got to keep going? Luckily, we have three very, well, four if you include me, very experienced GMs here to offer their own advice. So Jared, why don't we start with you? What are your thoughts on how you handle the game going completely sideways?
All right. Well, I'm going to default back to something that happened fairly recently in the Midgard game that I was running. We had a Minotaur. The Minotaur was not a bright character, and he was quite violent, but everyone in the party loved him and just conspired to keep him out of trouble. And at one point, they forgot to do this, and they let him buy a keg of gunpowder. And he was very upset with a kobold alchemist who had played a prank on him. So in retaliation for the prank, he sets off the barrel of gunpowder in the kobold ghettos in an alchemist shop, which proceeds to take out most of the city block. And what I was trying to do every stage of this was let him know, okay, I get you're doing this for fun, but it's an alchemist shop and it's gunpowder and something terrible could happen. So I didn't just let him go through the plan and then do this. Every step of the way, I was actually saying, okay, let's check in. If you do this, this is a likely consequence. And we kept escalating to the point to where this thing went off. I realized this could definitely be a problem for the overall campaign. So what I tried to do is bring that night to a satisfying conclusion. Like, if you're running a 4-hour session and something goes way off the tracks, if you're already at the 3-hour mark, it's probably okay to just find a good stopping point. Because anything that you try and correct in-game is probably not going to be the best correction that you could do. So we ended, and I sent out some emails to talk to him directly. So it was something that went off the rails, we had a good stopping point, and I talked to him and said, this is going to go very bad for you in the city. I want you to understand that that's a thing that could happen. Is it cool if we do this other thing and your character may end up being on the wrong side of the law, maybe leaving the party? You know, what are your feelings on this? So basically, because it went sideways, I wanted to talk to him as a player, not try and work it out in character. Sometimes trying to work things out in character just digs the hole deeper and deeper and deeper than if you just say, okay, we are playing a game, we are constructing a narrative, maybe this is a good time to discuss the narrative and not keep writing the narrative. And what we actually came up with is he was okay with the character leaving the campaign. We just wanted it to feel satisfying. So the next session, instead of everyone playing their regular characters, I pre-generated a kobold bounty hunter for each of the other players. And we played out the kobold bounty hunters hunting down the Minotaur and bringing him to justice. And it was great because it felt like we got control of the campaign back. It was still within the narrative, but it was something that if I would have tried that night to keep correcting for that last hour, it probably would have made it worse.
I had a similar situation the first time I ran Tales from the Loop. I guess I didn't emphasize the principles of the game well enough for the players because a very dominant player decided, you know, at about the 2/3 mark, that telling his mom what was actually going on was going to solve the mystery. It was going to solve the problem. And I knew that that wouldn't work because that's not what the game is about. And I knew that if they didn't stop the bad guy causing all the problems, there was a couple of important NPCs around town that would probably end up dying. Basically, the Norm, the owner of the arcade, was probably going to have a heart attack. And Adelaide, the crazy bird lady in the park, was going to end up wandering into traffic and probably get hit by a car. And the players, the other players, were really attached to these NPCs. And I knew that if they basically died, it would devastate these other players. So I was stuck with basically like, do I roll with this in game and let things happen as they should, or do I take a moment and pause and basically be like, you got, let's talk about the principles of the game again and remind you that going to the adults never solves the problem. You know, and it was like, eventually, you know, the dominant player kept arguing with me that his solution was still a good idea, but I eventually got them all on board to be like, no, let's continue investigating this and stop this guy ourselves.
That's an interesting thing. Like, you talked about the dominant player, because that is where I find games go off the rails, more so than something crazy happening in-game, when one kind of player or one sort of, you know, thread is dominating the others. Like, nobody's buying into, like in your Tales of the Loop, nobody's buying into, we're the kids, we solve it, we can't go to the adults, you know? Because I had that in a recent game where there was one player who was really kind of dominant in what they wanted to do, and they kept pushing the plot in their direction, which was fine, but like we kind of like work over the next session to bring it back to the entire group working as a whole, and they go back the other way and start pushing it in their direction, trying to find, you know, hammers and nails. They had a certain power set, certain way of thinking about things, and they weren't buying into kind of the group cohesion. And that's where it kind of moves things off the rails, and you never want to deal with that. Like, in the game, like you said, Jared, you never want to, you know, like, well, now I'm going to punish you in the game, or I'm going to move it this way, or if it's not easily going that way, you almost need to deal with that on the player level. Is that where you find most of, like, the issues in your stuff going there, or is it more of a clash of personalities, or more of a, yeah, the situation just became a weird thing in the game world?
I think sometimes there's a mixture, but yeah, definitely, like, for example, I don't think that my Minotaur player necessarily did anything wrong, but I think he was also more prepared to do bigger stuff because he is also the regular GM for an Adventurers League game, so he's used to being on that side of the seat where it's like, whatever I do, that's the world. So whatever I do with this character, that's what I do with this character. And I think that does create a little bit different mindset, a little bit more dominant, you know, personality type, where it's like, I will come up with this plan that may have all sorts of repercussions, and I'm not thinking so much team-wise, I'm thinking this is something that's going to be a big splash.
How about you, Phil? Have you run into these type of sideways adventures?
Yeah.
Have you maybe written a book on how to deal with these?
It comes up from time to time. No, I was just going to say before I tell my tale, my Tales from the Loop game, because I had a thing when any time that the characters went and talked to the adults, the adults took all of it as metaphor. So, like, it didn't matter what the kids said to them, they'd be like, oh, right, like, yeah, that's just capitalism. Like, that's just... And very quickly they learned, like, the adults were completely useless for any kind of help. Yeah, that's... That was my soft solution for trying to tell the adults anything, was that the adults never understand it. Anyway, yeah, I think there are times where you just need to admit that the game has gone so far sideways that you shouldn't run it any further. So I had this game I was running years and years ago. I was running a D20 Modern game that was called Heist, and it was a group of criminals that, you know, did like big heists and stuff. And as part of the campaign, they had attracted the attention of this larger criminal mastermind in the city who really just wanted to blackmail them and put them in kind of a pyramid scheme. Like, you know, we're just going to take 10% of your take and I'll give you, you know, a certain amount of protection, whatever. And the players managed to botch the meeting with this character so badly that really the only logical thing was that this character should like just vanish and kind of burn down all of their enterprise so that they couldn't be indicted. But I didn't have any of that prepared. And so the encounter went sideways. It was like 3 hours into the game. And I was like, you know what? We're done. Like, we're done today. We'll end early. We can sit around and, you know, play whatever else. But I need more time to actually go and come up with the master plan that this character had in his back pocket for the day that he got discovered. Like, otherwise, it's just not going to do any justice to the rest of the game. And so I did. I ended the game early, just acknowledged it. I was like, it's fine. We don't have to correct anything. But my next move, I don't want to make it from an improv position. I want to make it from a planned position because I'm going to make a really hard move. And I wouldn't have done as well of a job if I had just pushed through and just been like, oh, yeah, I'll just wing it from here. This was a criminal mastermind who had clearly prepared for the day that he was going to get outed and had like this, you know, huge plan for how to like basically torch his organization, screw the players and get away. And so I did. I just capped it right there and went back to my desk and feverishly came up with a killer plan and managed to keep the campaign going really strong, where I would have probably just kind of, I would have done a weaker version of it had I just been trying to do it on the fly. So sometimes it's okay to just stop the game and regroup.
I do think there are times when, you know, because there's like some of the examples we talked about earlier were like one player leading things sideways and then having to figure out how to balance that. But there are times too when like I've had situations where I've been running a game and the logic that I have in place for what is going on and what happenings falls apart when it comes in contact with the players, you know, and that's a case where it's me as a GM realizing I need to, you know, hurry up and adjust to, you know, what the players are thinking, because, you know, obviously I didn't realize the direction that they were going to interpret things or take things. And, you know, that's a, you know, if you're running a campaign, you can do as Phil did and basically take a moment and be like, okay, we're going to have a short session today because I need to regroup. If you're running a one shot, then, you know, you better start dancing quick on your feet because you still got to give those players that session you promised them.
Well, that's when you take the break, right? That's when you're like, wow, that was awesome. You know what? Let's take 5 minutes. Everybody run to the bathroom and I'll just sit here at the table and feverishly scribble down some notes of what's going to happen next.
You know, I also find that the players having this, you know, belief that there is this grand overarching plot. Like whenever I run out of a campaign, like right now I'm running Waterdeep Dragon Heist. And because I'm not running it at all like it's written in the book, but because the players see me reference the book to be like, ah, what was the name of that shopkeeper? And I'm like, oh, how does this happen? They have this kind of belief that they are in a cohesive story, no matter how much shit I'm making up on the fly, you know, that gives them a different sense of the game. Like in the campaign where the 8 month one I just finished, where I was just, it's all homebrew. It's playing out a setting that, you know, was kind of not attached to anything else. They kind of knew they could push it in different ways. But when they kind of, if I had a great big binder that was full of blank pages that I referenced all the time in that campaign, rather than just kind of like telling them what happened next, I think they would have felt more like, oh, wait, I'm fenced in a little bit because there are things that are static. Like, do you find like players have that different idea when you're running like something very prepared versus something like a one shot where you're like, oh, yeah, you know, everybody's making it up on the fly in a one shot?
I think there's a thing where players sometimes think, you know, sometimes players are like, oh, did I break the game? Right? Because if they think the game has been prepared, they're like, oh, did I break it? Like, did, you know, or sometimes they think that there's a way to break it.
Do they do that with joy?
Yeah.
Are they like, oh, did I break the game? I broke the game.
What I love is when I'm running Powered by the, most of the times when I bring a Powered by the Apocalypse game to a con for a one shot, I don't have a plan. I'm not thinking of anything until they tell me who their characters are. And it always blows my mind when, you know, like we get into the actual play of the game and somebody's like, oh, am I ruining the plot? And I'm like, there is no plot. There is what I've thrown at you and what happens next is what happens next. Let's see what happens next.
Yeah, that's always my plan for convention one-shots is like, I'm going to present you a problem. And then for the next 2 to 3 hours, we're just going to see how you solve this problem and how it goes sideways as, you know, your roles, you know, unfold.
I was running Lone Wolf for Cubicle 7 at Origins a few years ago. And it's the main plot that they give all the GMs to run when that year. And it's a fairly linear plot. It's meant to introduce the world, introduce the game mechanics, you know, very slowly throughout the course of the adventure. But I still, you know, accommodate the players and whatnot. And I had this one player who was just like, he was running off by himself doing all this weird, crazy stuff. And like, I realized at about the two-thirds point of the session that there was no way they were actually going to get to the written conclusion of the adventure. So I kind of had to take some pieces and shuffle them around and to give the game a satisfying conclusion. And when all was said and done, all the players were like, yeah, that was a really good time. Thank you for running that. And the player who was like, the reason everything was going completely sideways was like, yeah, that was fine, but it was way too much of a railroad.
But then again, if you show up to a convention demo game, like run in an official capacity by somebody working for the company, I kind of expect it's not going to be like something that somebody has lovingly prepared and reworked and retweaked. I'm like, yeah, there's probably a company line that's going to have to get towed so you can see, you know, all the aspects of the game because it's essentially a sales pitch, you know?
Yeah.
My favorite player resolving something completely not the way any scenario would have expected it was I was running the Young Avengers event that was given to me to run back when the Marvel Heroic was out. And there was a facility that they had to get into, and there were a couple of guards there. And the player that was playing Speed, who is the super fast, very similar to Quicksilver character, shows up and decides, okay, I want to take these guards out. And I was like, well, how would you like to do that? Well, I'm going to buy an asset where I go into the locker room and get one of the guards' outfits. Then I would like to make a roll against them and try and complicate them out of the scene by running out and buying them lunch and delivering it and telling them that I will watch the station while they go to the break room and eat these sandwiches. And the nice thing is, because the mechanics work the way they do, it was still just a roll. It went up above a D12. He complicated them out with sandwiches. There was no fighting involved, and it seemed very much like a trickster, speedster thing to do to resolve that situation, and I loved it. But I do think that there is, sometimes there is a difference between something that really goes off the rails and us getting an idea in our mind that it has to resolve a certain way. Right. And sometimes we need that break to go, is this really off the rails, or was this just not what I was expecting, and it's still going in the same direction?
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely figuring out the how is it going sideways? Is this I need to take a moment out of character and talk about how this game works and what's going to happen next? Do I just need to adjust my own thinking as a GM to, you know, adapt to the players? You know, what type of adjustment do I as a GM need to make to this hard left turn?
At Albuquerque.
any other thoughts on this? Any other last pieces of advice you would give to a new GM that comes to you and says, how do I deal with this?
I feel like it's almost the gnome stew mantra at some point, because we all kind of do variation of this, but like, the less you prepare, the less it goes off the rails. Like, the more you make up, the more you're a reactive GM, you kind of throw out a couple of tidbits and go, oh yeah, why not? You know, rather than, but it has to be this way. The more fun you probably end up having, you know, the less you actually prepare. So the less you have to try to keep to the railroad.
I think, Angela, you made a really good point earlier when you said that you have that discussion about principles again, because sometimes I think players get locked into this mindset of, I'm going to resolve this in a way that would make sense to me in the real world if I was in that situation. And sometimes you have to bring it back to principles and say, would this make sense for the character you're playing in the genre that we're playing?
Yeah, I had a talk with a friend she has a one shot with children in it. And I was like, part of the problem is your adult players can't really put themselves in the mindset of a 6-year-old properly, because 6-year-olds don't think the way adults do. So you have to be able to be like, okay, take that balance between what the way the player thinks and the way the character would think. And sometimes that can throw a wrench in the games. How about you, Phil? Do you have any last words of wisdom?
I mean, I'm always an advocate for the strategic pause. I mean, I think it even works when you're a reactive GM, right? When somebody comes up with something and you're just like, whoa, what is my next move off of that move? Just taking that 5-minute break. And there's no shame in it, right? Like, there used to be like a magic, like, say you have to go to the bathroom and then write your notes in the bathroom. Just like, literally, it's okay to just be like, hey, that was really awesome. Let's pause, take a break for a second. I'm going to think of what comes next. Like, there's no shame in that. Like, just take, like, pause rather than push through if you need to.
I think that's a good spot to end. So let's move into our outro. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by Anti-Plot Vertigo Tonic, designed for GMs only. When your stomach starts spinning as much as your plot, you'll need a little help keeping the rest of you from spinning out of control and keep that game moving forward. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out.
Down with D&D. Chris and the Mad Wizard Sean Merwin dish about everything D&D with a focus on the brand and newest edition of the world's most popular tabletop RPG. Down with D&D.
You can find all of us at gnomestew.com, at gnomestew on Twitter, and gnomestew on Facebook. John, where else can we find you on the internet?
I can be found wherever good John Arcadians are bartered or sold. It's a pretty unique name. If you look it up on Twitter, on Google Plus is going away, on Facebook, any place else, that's likely most of the time me.
Phil, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at DNA Phil. You can find me on both Pandas Talking Games, which releases every Monday here on the network, and live on the Misdirected Mark podcast, 8:45 p.m. Eastern, 6:45 p.m. the Queen's time. You can catch us on Twitch, and then you can find me at Encoded Designs, where we publish some stuff.
Excellent. Jared, what about you?
If you want to look up my blog, it's at What Do I Know? And if you want to find me on Twitter, it's at knightarrant_JR. I tell you to look for me other places, but platforms just blow up left and right and nothing is permanent. The world is just coming to an end. So don't look for me anywhere else.
And you can find me, Ange, on Twitter at Orikez13. So, John, did we avoid the stew this week?
I think most of you avoided the stew, but Jared said his blog was his own blog, not named Stew. So we may have to review that.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
And done. If I can find my mouse to stop.